officer.
Going to have the pleasure of again listening to Brother Magison. And he's going to take a topic from the second chapter of Ephesians. And he gives me the topic, From Darkness to Light. We'd be glad to hear Brother Magison at this time.
We'll not have time to cover the whole chapter, second chapter of Ephesians tonight, but we hope to be able to get a great deal of encouragement and help out of the study. This has had various titles, and I think that some are attractive to some and others to others. Some years ago in Boston, a brother came down from Canada, and he had a series of railroad tickets. And the whole travel was from what was called Hardscrabble Hollow, and the other end that was to be reached finally was the Hilltops of Mourne. And so some could use that as the topic, from Hardscrabble Hollow to Hilltops of Mourne. But the thought on the tickets was that all along the way there were various places you could stop if you wished, but there was a warning that this is such and such along the way, advising you not to stop there. And various pleasures, fairs, and all sorts of entertainments, and that you were could stop there if you wished, but you were advised that you were aiming for higher things. And if you wasted time along the road, you might not get there in time. Various things were very cleverly gotten up. And in this discussion of the chapter by Paul, he's very emphatic about many things. For instance, in the first verse, he starts out, "And you." Now, in our common version, "hath he quickened," those words are added. The original manuscripts do not contain them. They come in a little later on, but not here. And so he's emphasizing the thought, "Even you, you," he says. The chi, or the word "and" in the Greek, is used to emphasize. He's speaking personally and individually to each Gentile. And as he says here, "being dead in offenses and sins," that is, being legally dead, without life in God's sight, already under the curse from Adam. And it's only a question of time when one would be in the grave, just a few years, like a watch in the night, or an hour in the day. And he says that you are being dead in trespasses. That is, not through trespasses, but in them, in that atmosphere, in that living condition. The word is "in" here, all right. The dative case is used, the preposition doesn't occur, but "in trespasses." Now, the word in the Greek here for trespasses is to fall beside the pathway, to wander, to deviate from the right path, to stumble. That's the main root meaning, to fall or to stumble beside the pathway. And all of us are guilty of that, especially in the older days before we knew the truth, before we had come to the Lord. And we hope that it has been amended a little, and we've made progress so we don't stumble so often, we don't stumble so severely as we used to, but still we can't walk perfectly yet. And sins, in trespasses and sins. You see, there's two different words there used in the Greek. The word for sin is the ordinary word, meaning Adamic sin, various weaknesses. The root meaning of the word is to miss the mark, to miss the mark. You aimed right, you intended to hit it, but from various difficulties that were in the way, you couldn't quite accomplish that. You missed the mark. And it's odd that the Hebrew word for sin generally is the same root, the same thought behind it. Something to miss the mark. That's rather odd that it should be in two distinct languages from the same root. That is, not the same sounding root, but a root that is like in the two languages. Amatias, or Amatias, is the proper accent. And it is a thought of the fact that you're not only more or less stumbling, but you're involved on every side by the weaknesses that you've inherited from Adam. And that's where we all were. Now, some of us were down a little lower than others, but not many of us were princes of finance or of trade or were kings or princes in general politics, anything like that. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians, that ye see your calling, brethren, that not many great, not many wise, not many learned, and so forth hath God chosen, but as James puts it, chiefly the poor of this world, rich in faith, to be heirs of the kingdom. And so we see it was from a lowly condition that most of us were chosen. In which, he said, that is, in that atmosphere, in those surroundings, ye once, and the thought is, walked, as he said. Now, the meaning of the Greek word here is to walk about, to conduct yourself in life. And the thought, behave yourself generally. And in which then, in these surroundings, you behaved, you walked about, and had your fellowship, according to the age. The word is iona, and the thought is that the time or period in which you live, you try to live in harmony with the general customs, and with the general idea of the age. You fastened yourselves, as Peter puts it, according to the course of this world. You remember that reference in 1 Peter? I'll read it to emphasize a little the condition there. In the 13th verse of 1 Peter 1. Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts in your ignorance. That's what we're doing, you see. Fashioning our life, our thoughts, our actions, our words, by what men in general did. We like to go with the crowd and not be too much alone. And so the thought is here, that we were once in that condition and following the customs of the age, according to the age, the time or period of this world. The word used is cosmos, meaning this order of things, this arrangement that now obtains, this dispensation, as some have spoken it. The world's ideas and ideals, according to the prince, and here it puts it at the real root of the matter, that the whole world and the whole age were fashioned according to the will of this prince. According to the prince, the ruler, that is the first or chief one. And he says, of the power of the air. The prince of the power of the air. The word for power here is not the sense of energy, force, like dunamis. Neither is it the thought of muscular power, but it is rather the thought of authority. See, Lucifer was put in the place of authority by the Heavenly Father. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. The prince of the power of the air, that is, the air has been around the earth, not under man's control until just recently. He can't control it very much yet, but he's learning to get accustomed to it in various ways. But every once in a while, and altogether too often, we meet disaster in the air and the loss of life and wreckage of millions of dollars worth of property. It's not yet restored to mankind. And in the connection with this, the prince of the power of the air, we have various scriptures, most of which you are familiar with. In 2 Corinthians 4:4, you remember that Satan is called the god of this world.
and that he hath blinded the minds of them that believe not. In whom, that is, in those who are perishing, as the previous verse says, the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. The God of this world is Satan. And then in John's statement about, or Christ's statement in the 14th chapter of John, the 30th verse, he says, the prince of this world cometh and hath nothing in me. The prince of this world. And in the temptation where Satan told him he would give him all the kingdoms of this world, and he says, for they are mine, I have the authority, the Lord didn't dispute him at all. He knew that Lucifer had been entrusted with this world, even though he had abused it and wrecked the human race and tried to steal the dominion. Nevertheless, he was still left in authority. And you know that, to my mind, reveals to us the long-suffering patience of our Heavenly Father. He hates evil and pride and all the characteristics of Satan much more than we do. It irritates him much more. And yet, for love of mankind, he is willing to endure that irritation, blasphemy, disagreeableness, in order that we might thoroughly learn the way and the road and the results that disobedience gives to each one. So God had placed Lucifer over the human race. Then in John 12, 31, he says much the same thing. But now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. You see, that, as it were, was a turning point of decision. When Satan had opposed and crucified the Lord, that had, as it were, gone the limit. There was no turning back. The judgment was set against him. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. Of course, if you want to be literal, he wasn't cast out when Jesus spoke that. He wasn't cast out for some days afterwards. But Jesus spoke the matter prophetically. And he points out then that this Lucifer is the prince of the power of the air, and continues, of the spirit. That is, we were under this power of the, and under the oppressive influence of the spirit, the power of the air, of the spirit, now working in the hearts of the sons of disobedience. And I think the thought is there, the spirit being, not merely the spirit in the sense of the mental attitude, but rather the spirit being. Now working, that is, energizing in, operating in. The energy of work is derived from the wrong spirit, from selfishness. It is Satan's spirit. Now working in the sons of disobedience. Now the word here isn't the Greek word for children, which means either sex, and likewise is a general term for undeveloped little ones. But he says sons. And that's a stronger word. He means those who are of age, of thinking power and decision, and who have followed the spirit of the master of the house. You know, he's called the good man of the house. It isn't anything good in it. There's no word for the good in the Greek. It's just the householder, the master of the house. In fact, the despot is the word of the house. And he points out, continues in the description, the power of the air, of the spirit, now working in the sons of disobedience. Meaning, you see, that these were not merely disobedient from force of circumstances, but they had that spirit in them, the spirit of disobedience. You remember how Jesus said that the servant knoweth not what his master doeth, but the son does know. He enters into the will or purposes of the master and helps him carry them out. And that's the thought of a son. He's closer than a servant. A servant might be compelled to do from the fact that he is a servant, but when it comes to a son, there is more of this willing entering into, a decision to share in the work and in the spirit. And so these were the children of disobedience. They were brought up with that thought, and they continued in that thought, and most of them by their choice. Children of disbelief, that is, lack of faith. Here, it isn't a mishearing like it is in Hebrews 2, every disobedience received a just recompense of reward. But rather here, they are the children of those who have no faith. Alpha, the negative, and the Greek word for faith. Disbelief, lacking faith. The thought refers more to their conduct than to the individual. But unbelief is the root of it, the cause of their disobedience. Those whose lives are controlled by a disobedient heart, an unbelieving mind, instead of a self-sacrificing love. And the world of men in general is thus pictured here. And the most of us, at least many of us, came from that Gentile world. We weren't the children of those who were in the truth. Many of us were, but also many of us were not. We came out from the world. And that's the class, the Gentiles, to whom the apostle is writing this. You, he said, even you. And among whom, continuing the description, among whom, and in the thought is it the Greek word for in. Again, in that group. Not outside looking on, but inside the group itself. That's operating. As one of them, as a part of Adam's race, in the present evil world and of its order and spirit. We all. Now notice that he changes the pronoun here. First he starts out with you. And you to call their attention to the fact that they were once in this low and darkened and degraded condition. And he includes himself here. We all, yes, Paul admits that he was one of them. Although he tells us, and the records indicate, that he lived a good life, that he was blameless according to the law, and yet he realizes that he was far from being acceptable to God. He includes himself. We all once lived, that is, we had the turning about, our activities, our general ideas of life and plans of life, all had this atmosphere and this standard. We once lived in that condition. And he puts here, in the desires of. And he uses here a word that means not merely the wishes of, but the longing of the heart and the mind. It's a different word from the word for wish or desire in that thought. The natural longings of the fallen man, more or less perverted, some very poor because they inherited a very poor mind or inclination, habit, and others are much higher. Some of the human race are very noble beings. You couldn't induce them to do wrong if they knew it was wrong. In the desires, then, the natural longings of our flesh. And here he doesn't put it the word for body. It's the word for flesh, as distinct from the body, meaning the human nature is the thought. The fallen, twisted, perverted desires of a disobedient heart and mind. And we were doing the wishes, that's the word for wish there properly, of the flesh, the same word, and of the thought. And the word here is the workings of the mind. The wishes or desires of the flesh and of the mind. And by nature, he says, that is the thought of our begetting. You see, we were begotten in sin. We were nourished in iniquity. And so that mark or characteristic is all about us. by nature children, and here he uses the word for children, tekna, and not the word for son. By nature children of wrath, God's wrath. And he says, even as others are. Just the same as the rest of the world. Not very different. Not making much of an effort to get rid of the shackles. And yet we find that occasionally we meet men who are seeking, men who do want to get a better, freer, and more reasonable thought and purpose in their belief. And so even as others. And this is a picture of each one of us, that is, the Gentiles in general, who have come out of the world. And we can see it's a deplorable condition. We're glad, thankful, that the Lord did call us out of that. And then he goes on. But, and that word but means a great change took place. But God, being rich in mercy, on account of the great love wherewith he loved us. The thought, as he brings it out here in the Greek, is that the Lord had an abundance, a fullness, an overflowing of mercy. And he had that on account of his much love, is the word literally, his great amount of love with which he loved us. Now, does that sink into your mind? That the Lord drew you out of that mass of individuals. Many were there that were perhaps better than you. They were smarter. They had a little more money. They had a little more influence. But he passed them by. And he drew you out of that crowd and called you in his great love wherewith he loved us. And he points out that we also, being dead in offenses, we, he said, are made alive. That is, he, God, made us alive together with the anointed one. Notice there that though we were dead, legally dead, he said the great love of God reached down and made us alive again, together with the anointed one. And that was a wonderful association. There was no more holy being in the earth than this one, and you could equally well say in the universe except the Heavenly Father. And here he called these out of this fallen, darkened condition of mind and surroundings, and because of his great love he associates them with his Son. Begets them with a new desire of heart and mind, puts a new hope in them, gives them a new song, and as Peter puts it, has brought them out of darkness into his marvelous light. And we continually marvel more and more at the beauty, at the brilliancy, at the purity of that light, the loveliness of it. And as we learn more about it, we'll find that to all eternity, that will be our attitude. There'll be so amazing the depths of God in the new things that he brings out, the new plans and purposes,